Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Less than 1% of the world's diamonds are worthy of the Forevermark inscription, a promise of beauty, rarity, and responsible sourcing. Forevermark, a diamond is forever. Find your design at forevermark.com.
This episode of Little Gold Men is brought to you by Squarespace. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter offer code GOLDMEN, that's GOLDMEN, at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, an award season podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply. I'm Katie Rich, the Hollywood editor of VanityFair.com, and I'm here as always with Vanity Fair's digital director, Mike Hogan.
Hey, Katie.
And Vanity Fair's film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
It's been a couple days since the Oscar nominations. We've had time to process everything, and one of the more interesting narratives emerging, other than the ongoing scandal about how white this year's crop of nominees is, which is a whole other conversation, is the wide-open Best Picture race. It's rare that you see so many plausible films that could win at this point in the race. So we wanted to talk about what we see as the top three contenders, what we think might happen, and kind of when this has happened before in Oscar history. And then from there, we've brought back our friend Joe Reed of Decider to talk about this had Oscar buzz 2015 edition, the movies that didn't quite cross the finish line this year, what happened, and maybe which ones will already be on the horizon for next year. And then finally, we'll go big before we go home and take a look at what I think is the trickiest category to predict at this year's Oscars, Best Supporting Actress.
I'm out of time, Jim. We got cover-up stories on 70 priests, but the boss isn't going to run it unless I get confirmation from your side.
Are you out of your mind?
Come on. This is our town, Jimmy. Everybody knew something was going on, and no one did a thing. We got to put an end to it.
Don't tell me what I got to do. Yeah, I helped defend these scumbags, but that's my job, Robbie. I was doing my job.
Yeah. You and everyone else.
All right, so guys, you can stop me if you think that I'm wrong, but my perspective, and I think what a lot of people are thinking, is that Best Picture has basically come down to three movies, to Spotlight, The Big Short, and The Revenant. Are we all on the same page on this?
I think that you can't 100% count out Mad Max either, just because it has all the requisite nominations, and a lot of people think George Miller could win Best Director. In other words, the theory being that normally, if you don't have Best Director and Best Editing as well as Best Picture, you're not really in the race because those are so closely put together. So those four movies, but I would agree that more likely it's Revenant, Spotlight, or Big Short.
Katie, I think you're right. I think that my guess would be that if you wanted to rank those three, The Big Short is probably third. I think that its of the momentness has maybe passed a little bit.
Mm.
I hate to bring up this comparison, but to me it a little bit feels like the American Hustle of this year, which everyone loved for a couple of weeks, got 10 nominations and then didn't win anything.
Oh, but Big Short is better than
American Hustle. I mean, not quality-wise, I'm not comparing them, but like I think just in terms of like the way they sort of function in the conversation, both were sort of funky, fun, about, you know, sort of like American capitalism and ideals and all this stuff in a kind of comedic way, and everyone loved them when they saw them and were talking about them, and they were both surprises in a way. But for whatever reason, I feel like I rewatched The Big Short for the third time this weekend, and it holds up. It's still a great movie, but something about it just felt even a little less urgent already in the middle of January than it did a couple weeks ago.
Well, I watched Spotlight again this weekend, and I have to say I was like even more moved than the first time I watched it. Now, again, I'm like perfect target audience for this movie. You know, I'm like an Irish American from the Northeast who grew up Catholic and is in journalism. But I was like really, really deeply moved and blown away by the power of it and what it stands for and all the rest of it. But I do think that The Revenant has a lot of momentum coming out of various awards, including the Golden Globes, even though they are theoretically irrelevant to all this. To me, I think that it's time for these. There's no Harvey in the race. There's no Harvey Weinstein, who's known for kind of his closing moves and endgame. But if I were involved with any of these films, I would be asking myself, how are we going to create a narrative that says to voters, like, this is the movie that you want to enshrine for future generations to come back and say that was the movie of 2015? And I think Spotlight, I think they've been very kind of quiet, but they should do that. They have a real great argument to make that this stands for some seriously great principles that are sort of not overwhelmingly obvious in modern American life right now, especially in comparison to somebody like Donald Trump. I think Big Short can do that. I think it's a little harder for Revenant, but I feel like the picture right now is not where the picture will be or should be when the voting ends.
Right.
So there's something that comes up every year that there's some kind of movie that's like, this is what you should enshrine. This is the history. I think with 12 Years a Slave, a lot of people were justifiably concerned that Gravity was going to kind of come out of nowhere, or not come out of nowhere, but kind of swoop in and win after all. And I think it stems from the year that Brokeback Mountain lost, because that was the movie of that year that everyone said, this is the movie of 2005. This is the movie that you have to name Best Picture. And enough people said no that Crash wound up winning. And there's just this part of me that can't help thinking that people are going to see Spotlight and be like, no, I'm not giving it to this tiny movie that's all set in one room and, you know, starring actors wearing bad clothes. I'm going to give it to The Revenant.
Right. And I think, you know, if just to like infer some psychology of the voters, like, here's a small movie that's very powerful about journalism. Journalists at the moment, especially, are maybe a little bit antagonistic to, sort of certain portions of show business, versus this narrative about a movie where that was really hard to make, that, you know, actors and directors and crew suffered for mightily. And we've heard that ad nauseum about The Revenant, and also is doing well at the box office.
Yeah,
like that in a sort of more tribal way might resonate with Academy voters more than Spotlight, which is a celebration of an entirely different industry that is not theirs.
That's an interesting point. I mean, one thing, if you were to be running strategy for Spotlight, you might think about is how, forget about being a celebration of journalism, this movie is an indictment of most journalism, the way it's practiced today, and the paparazzi assholes making our lives miserable, and all the nonsense that's being spun out about your life, Oscar voter, and your world. Like, let's show these asshole journalists, like, this is what you should be doing.
Right.
You know, I think there's enough kind of creative narrative making that could be done here that it's not done yet. I like what you're saying, but I still don't hear a really, truly compelling narrative for The Revenant other than this is what Hollywood does best, which is not a bad narrative, but I don't even know that they fully crystallized it. They were very heavy on the whole, it was so hard to make, which I think was effective for getting Leo the nomination. I think that's less of a Best Picture case than it is a Best Actor and director case.
I'm trying to think of what got Birdman over the line last year. Like, it was about Hollywood in some ways, and it was about reflecting on the industry. It was about Michael Keaton in that way, and the way that The Revenant is about Leo. But I think this is what Hollywood does best. I mean, that was what I thought when I was watching The Revenant. I was like, this is why this industry exists and employs all these egotistical men who want to drag cameras over mountains so that we can capture insane things like this. Like, it's what epics have been about in Hollywood for decades, and it's really right in line with that tradition. Like, if you do a montage with The Revenant and Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments and Gone with the Wind, it all fits together.
But last year, it's not really comparable, because last year Birdman was really up against Boyhood. So the question was, do you want to reward a Hollywood movie that's about you, or do you want to reward this like interesting but weird indie movie from Austin that is so much smaller? And unfortunately, they chose Birdman, in my opinion. But it wasn't this kind of, there wasn't a contender that was like, this stands for something important about American
life. Well, and if the Oscars had happened a month later, it probably would have become American Sniper, which was opening in theaters and becoming this enormous hit on its way.
Or Selma.
Or yeah, or some a whole different direction. But yeah, you have these narrative. I mean, you're talking, Mike, about how this is the narrative now. It won't be the narrative in February. It changes so much, and it changes after the awards actually happen. So you kind of have to say, well, okay, when are they going to have their ballots? Mid-February. What's going to be happening a month from now?
And so, go from there. And I'm genuinely curious to see if any of the teams behind these movies is going to, like, get, you know, take off the gloves or not. There was a Politico thing over the weekend that called into question the conclusions of The Big Short by Michael Gruenwald, and then a bunch of people immediately leapt on it and ripped it apart and said, you know, you idiot. This guy, Michael Gruenwald, had co-written or ghostwritten Tim Geithner's book and was saying basically that the movie suggested that nothing had changed and actually a lot has changed and, you know, Dodd-Frank really worked. And then 100 people just jumped down his throat and were like, shut up. But that, you can see a lot more of that happening, you know, in the next month.
Well, and Spotlight already had their version of it. One of the people represented in the movie really objected to the way he was portrayed. And you can, I mean, it's Spotlight.
Well, and Michael Moore has been kind of murmuring that Spotlight has issues because at the end of the day, the Boston Globe should be indicted for sitting on the sub story for so long. I think the movie addresses that, but there are people who think that there's issues with Spotlight and certainly issues with Revenant. So,
well, I think, you know, and this is probably a tiny detail to focus on, and probably won't come to bear on. But, you know, I think you notice in something like Leonardo DiCaprio's Golden Globe speech, we talked about this already, but he kind of invoked, you know, Indigenous peoples and, you know, First Nations and all, you know, and I don't know if that was any sort of a cynical pivot for the movie to be like, well, no, it is about identity politics and it is about more than just survivalism. I suppose it's a dim possibility that the studio might kind of try to figure out some angle with that. But,
well, and also in an Oscar so white year where everybody's complaining, I mean, here's the best Latin American director.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. Yep. I mean, I guess The Martian you might be able to give some credit, but The Revenant is probably the least white Best Picture nominee, which is a sad story to tell, but that's the way it is.
I mean, it kills me that Spotlight is so easy to put in, like, a bunch of white guys talking, but it is a lot of white guys.
Yeah. So what's
But most of it's about how all these white systems of white power are sort of corrupt and horrible, which, you know, I guess is...
Yes.
Including the paper itself, which overlooked all this
stuff. And they happen to be preying on poor white people, but it's not exactly, you know, a celebration of white privilege.
Right.
No, exactly. It's probably the most... it's a very interesting indictment of white privilege in a way that's much more specific than I think many of the other nominees.
Yeah.
But what's the path you see to Mad Max jumping into this fray?
Well, I mean, I don't really... I just said you can't count it out.
Well, I'm kind of curious. Like, I want to imagine this scenario in which these three tear at each other's throats.
It has won a lot of critics' awards, right? Mm-hmm. And it is definitely, I think... It might be, of this group, the one movie that just about everybody walks out going, holy crap, what a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does seem to have sort of universal appeal, weirdly. And I was the one who kept saying, oh, these old Oscar voters are not going to get it. But apparently they do get it and they love it.
Yeah. It got 10 nominations. The Revenant got 12.
It's totally inventive movie making that's more sort of entertaining than The Revenant, but certainly also big, you know, big spectacle and big budget and putting a lot of people to work.
Yeah, and I don't think the same way as the average Academy voter, but I, you know, in a couple of ways, I feel like Mad Max could move forward toward the front of the pack. Is when I was making my top 10 list of the year, best movies of the year, and kind of putting it together in my head, the thinking was sort of binary. One was, it's the movie that stands out the most for me all year. Like, I still remember images from it the best, and I still feel the most about it, even though there are movies that I probably sort of intellectually engaged with more than I did Mad Max. So that's why I put it at number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was, I'll admit, there was some part of me that was like, I'm going to be kind of cool, and I'll like, Mad Max is going to be not my number one movie. Everyone else's is going to be Carol or Spotlight. Mine is going to be different. I turned out to not be different at all. The pack kind of ran, you know, I ran with the pack. But I don't know, maybe there's a voting thought there where they're like, you know what, I'm going to vote for Mad Max. It probably won't win.
Right.
But I remember I liked it the best this year, and maybe if enough people do that, then...
Maybe that's how Room got its nomination, too.
Yeah.
Go with your heart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can't get over the fear. I mean, and I guess I'm pulling for Spotlight most out of this bunch. Not by default, I really like Spotlight, but I can't get over the fear that people are going to feel too spoon-fed it, especially if the campaign ramps up the way that we were talking about between now and then people are going to reject it and
You think that they'll get blowback if they start really making that Harvey-ish case of like time.
I think you
honor
have to
the
make
paper,
the Harvey-ish
honor
case.
The
I think
film.
That yeah. is way. Yeah. I think that is what you do. But I do think that's what took down Brokeback Mountain. There were just enough people who were resistant to giving it to. I mean, for very different reasons.
Brokeback Mountain, you had a group of older people who might say, "Hey, wait a minute, let's slow down before we like say everybody should be gay." Whereas with this one, I think I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of Catholics in Hollywood, and there may be people, I can't imagine it, but there may be people who watch that movie and think
it's too hard.
It's unfair
church?
To the church, you know? Why are they picking on these priests? The movie basically portrays the Catholic Church as a glorified pedophile ring. That's basically what it does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, as we said, we have about 6 weeks to go in this race, so a lot is going to change. A lot is going to happen. Hopefully, we won't spend every week of this podcast talking about how we don't know what's going to win Best Picture.
Well, I'm telling you, the Carol thing is good. They're going to be sorry, wait, we found there was a ninth title on the list.
We lost a ballot under the seat somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a really interesting race to follow, and this time last year we totally knew Birdman was going to win Best Picture, or we at least strongly suspected Birdman was going to win Best Picture.
I still had Boyhood till the very end, but I'm just. Crazy like that.
It's good to have true believers like
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, you got a lot of people here respect you, Robbie.
Oh, well.
The work you do.
That's good to know.
You know, it's because you care about this place.
Yeah.
It's why you do what you do. It's who you are. You know, people need the church more than ever right now. You know, you can feel it. And the Cardinal, he might not be perfect. But we can't throw out all the good he's doing over a few bad apples. Now, I'm bringing this up to you because I know this is Barron's idea, his agenda. I gotta tell you, honest to God, he doesn't care about the city the way we do. How could he?
This is how it happens, isn't it, Pete?
What's that?
Guy leans on a guy and suddenly the whole town just looks the other way.
Before we bring in Joe Reed, let's pause for a word from our sponsor. In Forevermark's pursuit of absolute beauty, every Forevermark diamond undergoes a journey of rigorous selection. That's why less than 1% of the world's diamonds are worthy of the Forevermark inscription, a promise of beauty, rarity, and responsible sourcing. Each Forevermark diamond originates at a carefully selected source that provides benefits to its country and local community. This ensures that a Forevermark diamond helps improve the lives of those involved in its journey, so you can feel proud to give, own, or wear your Forevermark diamond. Forevermark, a diamond is forever. Find your design at forevermark.com.
What did you marinate the steak in? Because it's out of this world. You're killing me with...
No.
It's a family secret.
Oh, come on. You gotta tell me that. What's the secret? Come on. You could do it. Come on. That is one of the best goddamn steaks I ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. Ever. What's the family secret recipe?
It's ground garlic and a little bit of soy.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
I thought it was a family secret.
It's your recipe.
No. No. You said to me, this is a family secret. And you gave it up to me, boom. Just like that. You spill the secret family recipe today. Maybe you spill a little something about me tomorrow. Hmm?
So we'd like to welcome back as a return guest, Joe Reed of The Decider, writer of the Oscar Grouch column. I hope they don't make you live in a trash can while you write this column.
They don't, no. I've been able to, myself and Megan O'Keefe, we sort of have been trading off the last few weeks. It's mostly been her column, but I've been ably filling in, I feel like.
I think of you as an Oscar optimist because you're one of the people who writes about the Oscar season and doesn't hate it.
I don't hate it. I actually really love it.
But the cynicism, or the kind of implied cynicism of your blog that's had Oscar Oscar buzz. It's why we have invited you back, because
yes.
The Oscar nominations are out, so we now know what of 2015's crops, and not failures, just didn't quite make the runoff the
curiosities.
Way
curiosities.
Yeah. So what are kind of the big
museum pieces?
Right, exactly.
You could call them. Yes.
So what to you are the movies from 2015 that we're going to look back at and be like, holy shit, that had Oscar buzz?
When I updated the site over the weekend with about a dozen ish new entries, class of 2015. It makes it sound more prestigious that way. They need some prestige. They lost out on so much. Black Mass was the one I wanted to do first off, because I feel like that was the one that feels like came the closest.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be funny to think of in 3 or 4 years. Do we think of it as the one that came the closest, or how did that come the closest?
Yeah.
I feel like now that Scott Cooper has made two movies in a row that were anticipated along Oscar lines. And it's funny, the last movie that I had added to the site before this batch of 2015 ones was Out of the Furnace.
Oh, no.
And that one, I think even now when we look at that, it was just like, how did we think that the Oscar voters were going to go for that? It's so violent. It's so, like, grim. But like Scott Cooper, because he had success with getting an Oscar for Jeff Bridges, or Jeff Bridges got an Oscar on his time or whatever, now we sort of look at Cooper as, well, he's got, you know, a check mark in his column, so now everything that he does for at least the next few will be viewed through that Oscar prism. And
yeah.
I think that's what you get with, like, a Meryl Streep movie. Any movie that Meryl Streep's in, you know, be it Ricky and the Flash or Suffragette, both of which came up totally empty this Oscar season.
Yeah.
But it's worth thinking about the fact that, we had a whole episode that was titled, "Is this the year that Johnny Depp, you know,
right.
was an Oscar or whatever."
We were so Revenant blind back then.
Yeah. And I mean, that movie really did. And this was after people saw it.
Right.
I do think in retrospect, he looked too much like Gary Oldman in Interview with the Vampire movie.
I thought you were going to say
Bram
Hannibal.
Stoker's
Bram
Dracula.
Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah.
So it was a makeup issue. And then he had the wrong accent. I'm just going to say, as an Irish-American, he talked like an Italian mafia guy, not an Irish mob guy.
It was a dog's breakfast of an accent right there. Yeah. It was really
It's been quite a year for Boston accents.
I went to school with Kevin Weeks, is his nephew. I went to high school with him. And none of them sounded like what you would describe. Like, they weren't good fellas. They were guys from South. Yeah,
he sounded like my grandfather. Because Joe Berlinger made an amazing documentary, by the way. Everyone should see on Netflix the Whitey Bulger documentary. And you can hear him and how he talks, because he's on the phone. He doesn't really give interviews, but he gave this one interview. He doesn't talk like he's from Goodfellas at all.
Exactly. But Joe, do you think that, did Black Mass have Oscar buzz beyond Johnny Depp, or was he like the kind of the sole sort of engine of that movie?
I think before anybody saw it, it had Oscar buzz
in general.
Entirely, because it checked a lot of boxes. I think what you see with a lot of these movies that we were thinking of and then failed, they check a lot of boxes. So Black Mass was about a real life thing, and it was a mob movie, which we tend to think will do well with Oscars, but that's only really Scorsese in the last like 15 mm-hmm. years or whatever. But it had a lot of potential, the Scott Cooper thing. The cast, it was one of those casts that was full of big names that was like Benedict Cumberbatch and Joel Edgerton and all these people who are sort of like happening. And then once people saw it, people were just like, but Johnny Depp. And nobody really talked about the movie after that. And then the Depp thing, Mike, like you were saying, like people sort of like started chipping away at how effective that performance really was. And Depp as a personality seems like somebody who it's maybe his time at some point.
At some point, if Johnny Depp keeps making real people movies and not mm-hmm. Tim Burton movies,
right.
We'll see how it goes.
I think that was a lot of it, too. People were very happy that he wasn't making another Tim Burton movie.
So if he keeps on that track, eventually we'll get him in the Leo stage where it's like, okay, it's finally his time, and we'll remember Black Mass as being like, oh, yeah, Johnny was robbed, or maybe not that dramatic.
Hey, if we start hearing stories about how hard Alice in Wonderland 2 was to make and how he slept in a CGI field of daisies or whatever. Right.
So Black Mass could still be the beginning of the Johnny Sons.
Could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't good enough to get over the hurdle.
Yeah.
But was it an extraordinarily good year for Best Actor, or was it
That's
just...
the thing. I don't think it was. I think if you saw, even, you know, talking about the contenders leading up to the nominations, it was about the five people who got nominations, people hoping that Michael B. Jordan could get a nomination, and people wondering if Johnny Depp could sort of make that resurgence. Because I think he got, a SAG nomination or something like
that. Yeah. Or Michael Caine or Ian McKellen,
right?
And, you know, two others that had Oscar buzz contenders.
Exactly, yeah. For Youth and for Mr. Holmes, and those are two others where they just it just didn't happen, and they were sort of banking on that kind of sentimentality of, we love Ian McKellen. We love Michael Caine. Here they are in a movie. They're sort of, it's a somewhat sentimental role, that kind of stuff. And sometimes it just doesn't happen. And
yeah.
whether it's because the whole story, you know, coalesces around the five that we ended up getting so quickly, which is sort of what happened there. I mean, you know, Michael Fassbender wasn't budging from that field. And
which surprised me, given how much Steve Jobs kind of fell out of people's radars. But he and Kate Winslet, both of them.
Yeah, some movies just sort of, like, become performance movies in the Oscar voters' minds. Mm-hmm. And those performances, like, Kate Winslet was also, like, she was never budging out of that race.
Yeah. And, well, the other high-profile actor contender that you had on your list is Concussion, which, like, it didn't even get the Black Mass bump. It just went nowhere so fast. I don't know if it – because it opened on Christmas opposite The Hateful Eight and The Revenant, which seemed to take all the attention.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, Will Smith used to be able to guarantee open a movie. Like, 7 pounds made money.
Yeah.
What the hell happened with Concussion?
The NFL got to it.
Roger Goodell slashed his throat.
They didn't even have legs to. Out. That's the thing.
No, they didn't. Well, they really didn't. Yeah.
Well, and I think you look at something like Concussion. I mean, 7 pounds sort of, you know, faltered with Oscars, obviously,
yes.
too. But it did make money, you're right. But you look at what Will Smith has been able to do. His two Oscar nominations were Ali, playing a real person in a boxing movie, although boxing movies were not very successful this year, as they have been in the past.
Yeah.
But that, like, Ali fit into a lot of, you know, big transformation. He sort of physically transformed himself. All those things Oscar voters love. Pursuit of Happiness was just, like, an aggressively, like, sentimental, like, you know, we're going to feel for that character mm-hmm. if you watch that movie.
And it was his kid.
And
it wasn't.
Jaden.
Yeah, exactly. There was like a lot of stuff there. Concussion didn't really have any of those. It was a real life person, but it was a real life person nobody ever had really heard of. It was a sort of niche story in that it was about sports and not everybody cares about sports. And it was like the wonky side of like sports medicine. So, you know, of all the topics that you could talk about, like sports medicine is not an Oscar genre, I feel like. So.
Well, and it wasn't hard hitting. Not to be
a concussion.
Punning, but yeah. And his performance was very kind of clenched because that was the type of character he played. I don't know if it was clenched, but it was reserved. The whole point was that he was this intellectual guy who's sort of charming, but there's not a lot of sort of chewing scenery.
Even his big, like, tell the truth scene, like, it's just like he's very clenched down.
I was going to say that tell the truth thing, they feature prominently in the trailers for the movie, and I think it's supposed to play as this big rousing thing, but it feels a little bit silly in the trailer.
Yeah.
In the whole movie, it fits really well. I actually like that movie a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah.
But I think that you watch that trailer and it's like, oh, I can see so much what they're going for, but it's just not getting there at any kind of step of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, and now I think we'll remember that one as a kind of like, oh, it got that Curiosity Golden Globe nomination that like nobody remembers for like Scarlett Johansson in The Love Song of Bobby Long or like The Great Debaters or whatever.
Like Mark Ruffalo really and weird, Infinitely Polar Bear.
Exactly, those really weird Curiosity Golden Globe nominations. Were
Or we'll remember it as the movie that would have gotten Will Smith a nomination if the Oscars weren't racist.
Or that,
ooh.
Yes. Well, as
I mean, it might happen the way things are looking
now. Yeah, Jada Pinkett Smith is sort of bringing Will into that conversation where everybody else is talking about like Idris Elba and
Michael B. Jordan.
And Jade is just like, well, it was Will. Will was robbed.
That was a
like,
bold move for her to just step up,
put
her name on the line, be like, I'm angry about my husband not getting nominated.
Arguably, she had a more deserving case this year for her performance in Magic Mike XXL.
Inarguably. I would say she was fantastic in it.
No one's talking about that Oscar so white element.
I mean,
we talked about Concussion and Black Mass. There's also Legend and Mr. Holmes and Youth, as we mentioned. There are all these actor vehicles that kind of failed to get across the finish line, which is weird because, as we were saying, it wasn't a super crowded best actor field. But, like, I wonder if because, like, the female roles were so much more interesting, the best actors field is, I think, much more dynamic. And there are all these women who didn't make the cut. Like, is that how buzz happens? Like, does us getting really hooked on all these female performances make movies like Mr. Holmes just fall apart?
I think at some level you have to have people enthused about your movie on some level and people talking about your movie. And I think this fall you had a lot of people talking about Carol either anticipatorily or after they had seen it sort of talking about, you know, is it chilly? Is it emotional enough? Is it, you know, does it have enough in it to make it across the finish line Oscar-wise? And
which it didn't.
Although 6 nominations is nothing to sneeze at.
Not for Best Picture.
But not for Best Picture and not for Best Director. But I think you got a lot of chatter about that kind of stuff. People really liked Brooklyn. Like, people really, like, took Brooklyn to heart.
Mm-hmm.
And people were very impressed by Room. And I think there is some sort of there's a finite amount of attention that can be paid to things. And I think something like Legend, which was built to be such a Tom Hardy vehicle in terms of the difficulty. I honestly think, like, that was Leo's slot this year. Leo's slot this year was, look at what a feat, like a degree of difficulty I am overcoming in this. And Tom Hardy might have been able to have that to himself if somebody else wasn't. Like, it's hard for Tom Hardy to be like, look at how hard it was to play two people and whatever.
When Leo's like, when Leo's just like, river.
Exactly. And like, yeah, crawling through a pile of bison livers or whatever.
I think that's interesting. But also, I mean, you have to acknowledge that Legend is just not a successful movie.
Oh, I don't
it's
think it's a good
like
movie
kind
at
of
all.
An inept
right.
directing.
Right.
And so whatever you might like disagree with the sort of implied politics of Revenant or find it excruciating or whatever, but at least it's unbelievably expertly made.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Leo has a really Hardy performance. I mean, I felt bad for Tom Hardy in Legend because he's doing amazing stuff, but it's not coming together on the screen.
Yeah, the rest of that movie was not up to his level.
So, Joe, what's the most surprising movie on your sort of short list of this had Oscar buzz? What's the one that you thought really was going to earn its Oscar buzz?
I think there are a couple. One being Suffragette, because I felt like a year out, Suffragette seemed like such a good pick, at the very least for acting nominations. And I think part of that is we're sort of conditioned to think of Best Actress, and to a lesser extent Best Supporting Actress, as these sort of like shallow pools for Oscar nominations. Best Actress, there's not always a lot of, not a lot of great female performances, because there always are, but in movies and in genres that Oscar tends to go for. This was not the case this year. So like, worse luck for Carey Mulligan, because in a sort of lesser year for Best Actress contenders, she probably would have been at least in, more in the conversation than she was. She never really was. Suffragette sort of came and went very quickly. And she was quite good in Far From the Madding Crowd, which also didn't really ever catch on Oscar-wise.
Yeah, but yeah, that one didn't even get like the costume nomination that some people thought it might pick up.
And that you can have a Meryl Streep performance in an Oscar genre movie to get no attention. It's just like, it's not something we're used to.
To be fair, she's on screen for about 5 minutes.
I still haven't seen Suffragette.
I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but she is so, it's such a cameo that, you know.
Is Carey Mulligan in that horrible dead spot between being an ingenue that Oscar likes and being an older lady that Oscar likes?
Oh God, that dead, she's like 28. That dead spot's going to last forever.
I feel like she has
just
been,
because her first nomination was for An Education, which is how long ago now?
It was 2009. Yeah. And I think she was, and then the very next year, Jennifer Lawrence for Winter's Bone. And I think Jennifer Lawrence sort of, you know, took up all that ingenue oxygen in the room. So I think that's definitely, there are definitely slots. I feel like it's sort of, it seems cynical to think of things that way. But I do think you notice that with Oscar nominations where...
Well, if Carey Mulligan stole Keira Knightley's thunder, then Felicity Jones steals Carey Mulligan's thunder. And it's just all these poor British actresses just lining up and, you know, waiting to come to America.
Ring around the rosy and we pull one chair away. And yes.
I mean, so we're talking about like years where Carey Mulligan could have gotten nominated, or years where some of these, you know, like where The Pursuit of Happiness got in. Like the Oscars vary so wildly from year to year. Like Reese Witherspoon winning Best Actress for Walk the Line happened in a vastly different Best Actress field than what we have this year.
Correct.
Like it's crazy just how different it is based on not only the group of movies, but like what the mood is. It's so, so you can't like look at The Walk a year out and say like, oh yeah, that's going to fail an Oscar buzz. Like that's why these things happen every year, because you just kind of never know.
Right. And that's what I think is sort of fun about it. And you sort of, you look at these movies and it's just like, yeah, you're right. Why did The Walk, which is so like visually, you know, appealing and interesting, why did that fail? Where at least like Flight, which is also Robert Zemeckis, which was also a movie that people liked certain things about it a great deal and certain things about it not at all, that still got a couple of Oscar nominations. Whereas The Walk was just like out. And
And The Walk tanked so hard.
That was
box
the
office.
Thing. Sometimes you tank so hard that it just, you can't recover. Yeah.
Also, if Denzel Washington had been doing a terrible French accent in Flight.
That is, absolutely.
And being a mime.
Yeah. People thought Denzel Washington was one of the best parts of Flight. People thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt was one of the like weaker parts. Certainly like that accent.
Even though he's fluent in French, I just don't understand.
I liked The Walk and Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it.
But. I liked a lot of The Walk quite a bit. It was felt very similar to Flight in that way. I liked a lot of Flight in that way.
What else is on the list, Joe?
So something like Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which had such like a debut at Sundance. People really were talking about that. The End of the Tour, to a lesser extent. The movies coming out of Sundance were Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, The End of the Tour, and then the one that did manage to make it, which is Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there can be only one, just like The Highlander.
I was arguing with a publicist friend last night that about, you know, about Sundance and Oscar buzz, because, you know, Mike and I are about to head off there tomorrow and face a whole new crop of movies, God help us. But I made the argument, I don't think Brooklyn broke then. I feel like some people saw it, a lot of people liked it, but I don't feel like its awards narrative really started in last January.
I think that's probably fair. I think it's something that accumulated. It did that smart thing of playing all the festivals.
Right.
And mm-hmm. it played Toronto, and then it played New York, and it sort of built up momentum from there. Yeah. Where something
I think I heard about it in the fall, but right. more so then. I mean, I'm sure I heard about it at Sundance, but it wasn't like, yeah. ooh, I can't wait to. Me and Earl was the one that came out of Sundance where it's like, you got to see it.
Yeah. And then I think people were expecting it to open and to sort of connect to people in that kind of Little Miss Sunshine way,
mm-hmm.
As this sort of like little movie that could, you know, sentimental and emotional, and it just. It didn't. And sometimes there's no accounting for why it didn't.
I didn't see it at Sundance, and I saw it like on demand later. You know, that sad Sundance thing where like the hottest thing in Sundance is just like free on demand 6 months later.
Yep, totally.
And I was just like, oh my God, the altitude really is high in Park City. You know, there's just something, I don't know. It just didn't really
work. Well, there's that festival fever.
Well. Yeah, there's a lot of festival fever at Sundance.
Yeah, so as we prepare to send Mike and Richard to Sundance, we're preparing for a whole other round of this head Oscar buzz.
Yep.
It's kind of a sad way to look at an upcoming festival.
It really never ends. And that's why Joe's Tumblr works so perfectly, because it's just a constant cycle of hope and disappointment.
That's right. Really.
Maybe to end it, is there anything on this list of this hot Oscar buzzes that we feel especially bad about? Anything we were really crossing our fingers for that
I think
the finish line?
Before I saw it, I was really high on Freeheld, and I even feel bad, sort of. I felt that like little twinge of regret putting Freeheld on this list. I didn't put something like Beast of No Nation on the blog because I feel like that's a movie that I thought was really good, and it's sort of the Schadenfreude aspect that I feel like for this had Oscar buzz. I didn't want to put that onto Beast of No Nation, but Freeheld felt a little bit more of like it was so good on paper and it just did not live up to that on the screen, and it was really too bad. Julianne Moore and Ellen Page are giving, you know, performances that really do try, and it just never connects at all. And it was just like, I thought, such a shame.
Yeah, that one from the minute I saw it at Toronto, I was just like, I just wish I could root for this more.
Yeah.
Well, I think with Beast of No Nation, that clearly, at least from Cary Fukunaga's perspective, was not an Oscar play.
Right.
That was a movie that he, because it wasn't set up like a kind of movie that should win at the Oscars. I think Netflix decided this thing is good enough and interesting enough and does have enough connection points for voters that we should push it. But it, unlike some of these other movies, I mean, it was a pretty bold, risky play.
And the Netflix thing made it a huge thing to overcome. There's this huge bias against movies debuting on Netflix that people really don't like seeing that happen. They don't like seeing the theatrical windows shrunk in that way. So even though it was a tough movie, it also had that huge hurdle to overcome. And good on Netflix for promoting it to that extent. And Idris Elba got a SAG nomination.
And the cast got a SAG nomination.
And it got a SAG nomination, So, like, it worked on some level, and it's bringing attention to this pretty great movie on Netflix. So.
Yeah.
That worked from their end, but the Academy would have had to overcome a lot to embrace it.
Yeah.
Joe, thank you so much for coming back and
joining us. Thank you for having
me. We'll have you back for non-Schadenfreude topics at some point soon.
I love it. Thank you.
Do you have any idea the impact of what you're doing?
Yes, I do.
Do you understand the impact of what you are doing? If just 10% of the mothers in America decide that football is too dangerous for their sons to play, that is it. It is the end. Of football. Kids, colleges, and eventually, it's just a matter of time, the professional game.
Joe, he does autopsies. He's not in the outcome business.
He has no business.
You know what history does to people. Trained physicians who ignore science.
Oh, wow.
Sir, I am not done. History laughs. If you continue to deny my work, the world will deny my work. But men, your men, continue to die, their families left in ruins. Tell the truth. Tell the truth.
Before we move on, a word from our sponsor.
This episode of Little Gold Men is sponsored by Squarespace.com. If you wanted to start your own Oscar blog and compete with the likes of Gold Derby and VanityFair.com, you could. With Squarespace, you can make sites that look professionally designed regardless of your skill level with coding. There is no coding required, in fact. It has intuitive and easy-to-use tools, and you get a free domain if you sign up for a year. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code GOLDMEN, G-O-L-D-M-E-N, to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Fix it.
What the?
Fix it, Steve.
Take it easy.
Fix it, or I quit. How about that? I quit and you never see me again. How about that?
Tell me what's wrong with you this morning.
What's been wrong with me for 19 years? I've been a witness, and I tell you, I've been complicit. I love you, Steve. You know how much. I love that you don't care how much money a person makes. You care what they make. But what you make isn't supposed to be the best part of you. When you're a father, that's what's supposed to be the best part of you. And it's caused me 2 decades of agony, Steve, that it is for you. The worst. It's a little thing. It's a very small thing. Fix it. Fix it now. Or you can contact me at my new job, working anywhere I want.
So guys, now that we have the nominees, it's a little easier to go big before we go home, but I've picked a tricky category, I think, because in Best Supporting Actress, I have no actual idea who is the front runner, which is why I want us all to predict who we think is going to win in that category. Richard, what about you?
Oh boy, putting me on the spot here. There is a sort of lazy part of me that's like, maybe Kate Winslet will just kind of make off with
it. She was cute at the Golden Globes.
She was, yeah. People like her. But I don't know. You know, we're talking about Spotlight and being the best picture frontrunner or whatnot. I think that they're, I don't know. I could see Rachel McAdams almost in some ways, if things turn in a weird way and it doesn't win some of the bigger stuff it's nominated for, I could almost see McAdams being the standout.
Being like, the Spotlight.
Be like, here's the award that and you can share it with everyone else.
Huh.
I mean, that's a really kind of like wild... it's not going to happen, but I could see it happening.
I like the idea of Mark Ruffalo being like, is it my turn with the Oscar?
Exactly, yeah.
I looking at this list again, like I keep going back and forth, but I feel like Alicia Vikander has the narrative of it having been a really big year for her. And were there anyone else in supporting actors who had a really strong, like it's their time or they gave the stunning performance or whatever, they might overpower it. But she's, you know, a lot of us thought she was going to get nominated for Ex Machina. She had this great year. She is the ingenue that the Oscars love. So I think even though the Danish Girl is not the most beloved of the nominees, it got... I think 5 or 6 nominations, which is nothing to sneeze at, but isn't a major contender. I think she could really win it for a lead role in a supporting category.
Yeah, most people seem to be predicting either Rooney or Alicia Vikander. Rooney Mara for Carol, Alicia Vikander for Danish Girl. Rooney Mara has the same issue, which is it's basically a lead role, and they're only because the movie is named after her love interest does she get to run as supporting.
Although usually, if that is an issue, that doesn't prevent you from winning an Oscar. They have, Jennifer Connelly won for Beautiful Mind, etc.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I could... Carol seems to have, the air's come out of its tires in some ways, but I think that Rooney would be a perfectly good place to sort of, like... put a marker down and say, this was a really good movie that should be remembered. So I could see that happening. I also think Jennifer Jason Leigh could win. I mean, for the same reason for Hateful Eight. You know, Hateful Eight kind of obviously didn't really connect with Oscar voters in the way that some people had hoped. But, she's in there. She gives certainly a unique performance. Kind of, I found her to be a relief from a lot of the rest of the proceedings. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I guess Rooney Mara.
We've now named all 5 contenders as possibilities.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Maybe they'll all share it. But one quick thing, Katie, that's interesting about your theory about Vikander is... that Jessica Chastain was nominated for The Help for having a similar year. I think she was in 6 movies that year. Lisa Vikander was in 7, I think.
Oh, my God.
In 2015. Octavia Spencer ended up winning for The Help.
Yeah.
But there isn't someone else from Vikander's movie who could sort of thwart her from kind of achieving that, like, here's the cap off to your amazing debut year.
Yeah, so maybe that could... there's not a strong narrative the way there was for Octavia Spencer, who was, like, clearly the breakout star from that movie.
Right.
this is the tricky one. It's gonna. I hopefully, you know, as the Oscars get closer, some clarity will emerge. But you know, maybe we'll go to Oscar night, it, like the year that Tilda Swinton won. That it was her and Amy Ryan and Ruby Dee and Cate Blanchett. I think it was this crazy competition, and no one knew who was going to win. And
I do think, just going back for a sec, I do think that Rooney Mara, you know, is not the warmest person in the world, and nor is Alicia Vikander, which is fine, and that's their right. But at some level, there's a schmooze factor to this thing, potentially. And then there can also be that you're just this remote goddess and everybody wants to reward you. But I do think that there is some narrative around Jennifer Jason Leigh as like a comeback thing that could build steam, potentially, you know.
And she's, you know, her it's a family business for her. So, you know, her father was an actor and, you know, she's been in Hollywood for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, you know? Fast Times at Ridgemont High, man.
Yeah.
And she's got Harvey in her corner.
And yeah, she was on this podcast. So that,
she was
that's
on
an
this
obvious
podcast.
Bump.
The Little Gold Man bump. You know,
yeah.
That's
well known.
That will be huge for her.
We can hope anyway.
That does it for this week's Little Gold Men. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. You can find us writing about award season and much more at vanityfair.com. You can also find the show on iTunes, where you can rate and review it. We very much appreciate those reviews and you guys for listening. You can also find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Katie Rich, KateyRich, and Mike.
Mike_Hogan.
And Richard.
Rylaws, RILAWS.
And we're all together at the feed Little Gold Men. This episode was produced by Sam Dingman and edited by Tim Einenkel. And thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. Find us and many more great podcasts at panoply.fm.